they were not expelled anywhere else. They are still in Belarus too, right? About Belarus, yes, sorry. We are a union state, so I do not really separate Belarus. Yes, indeed, you are right. Belarus should also be included. You are absolutely right. So at the moment we record that, regarding pure combat operations, there is no doubt that there are none. Even if you consider all three Baltic states together, even with the preemptive mobilization and the construction work to build fortifications, they simply would not withstand a strike. But Britain does not need the Baltic states to defeat Russia. Britain wants Russia to react to provocations, to launch missile or artillery strikes of any kind. After that, they would impose a full blockade of the Baltic Sea. Do you remember they practiced exercises together with Denmark and Norway? Yes. About blockading the Danish Straits. They advocated, among other things, what even seems completely idiotic, mining the exit from the Russian part of the Baltic Sea, the kind of extensive mining Hitler used during the Second World War. In the same way, they dreamed of, once again, sealing off the exit from the Gulf of Finland with booms and minefields. They even went that far. I think Hitler, if he were alive, would be standing and applauding right now. All of this had already been thought up in his day. In show on Nor 2. In his day. In
tell me, Britain may believe a lot of things, but if this actually escalates into a conflict, even without nuclear weapons, we could handle Britain, which only has a 14-day gas reserve. No, sorry, 4 days. 14 days is what those in New Zealand have.
4 days.
Imagine if we cut the cables, or if cables in the Atlantic suddenly broke, isolating London, the city of London, from the markets and exchanges. In the West, in America, that would cost them huge sums, and their infrastructure is so vulnerable that with our weapons, like a nutcracker, we could easily shut off the power in England. Are they really ready to go to war with the United States, or do they think it will never come to that?
Look, the British political and military elites are sincerely convinced that they are capable, which, by the way, is their mistake and delusion. And that does not make it easier for the United States. They keep provoking United States based on that error. They are convinced that with some Russian military activity, Britain can persuade France, Germany, and Poland to start fighting, while Britain gives them valuable advice.
Like in the First World War when they thought they could give advice.
Yes, you are absolutely right. And the terrifying thing is that among Britain's political, military, and financial banking elites, this idea is fully entrenched. They really think that way. And they truly think like that. So what is the Kremlin's plan right now, judging by the current strategic actions of our leadership? In the Kremlin, they clearly see that the socio-political and ethnic situation in Britain has become so acute that Britain can no longer return to its former standing as a full power at the level of the Group of Seven. What keeps Britain in the Group of Seven is only the historical memory of the other six countries. Britain is just a small island. You know, when I studied British regional studies at the academy, it was my specialty. Our teacher told United States a wonderful English saying about their country. England is so small that you can piss from one shore to the other.
I thought you would talk not about England's size, but about why the English are such good sailors, because of their food and their women.
Exactly, exactly. Well, translated into Russian, England is so small you could pee from one shore to the other. Actually, regarding humor in Britain, by the way, everything is fine. They really have wonderful humor. Peculiar, but very sharp. But the problem for Britain is the following. In the medium term, in about 10 years, Britain's demographic and ethnic situation, or rather its dynamics, looks so dire that we will most likely see more than mere changes. This Thursday, Stas, we saw very telling elections in Britain. Very revealing. The second major party, after the Conservatives, the Liberals managed, in just 2 years, to lose so many votes that it was only natural that in first place, practically doing nothing but making populist statements, the Reform Party of Nigel Farage emerged, and the Greens. Moreover, the English Greens, their party is a party of political eccentrics. They are not a systemic party like the Greens in Germany, not at all. They are genuine political freaks. Just clowns. Clowns who really want war.
Yes, by the way.
They support real military action against our country. And actually, they support, among other things, Israel's actions in the Middle East, including the genocide of the Palestinians. That is, to show who is rushing to take power in Britain. They are populists, even less informed about the world than the degraded Labour Party and the Conservatives.
I will say one thing. Apart from migration, the Reform Party is exactly the same as the Conservatives they are supposed to replace. Their stance on Russia has shifted completely. It now mirrors what the Conservatives advocated and is not much different from theirs. More right-wing parties are forming and already loudly emerging that want to cleanse England. Forget Russia. That is not something we need to worry about. We will focus on the demographics of foreigners in England, as they put it.
Yes. Now remember, Stas, the demographic trend that even the staunchest patriots of England and the monarchy are forced to admit. They have to admit that London, Birmingham, and Manchester, the largest British cities, are now more than 40% composed of so-called ethnic diasporas and minorities. Moreover, those 40% account for almost all the births. So the native English people, and Stas is absolutely right, who vote for Farage's Reform Party to rid Britain of migrants. These native British are not having children. So whose children are being born, mainly? To immigrants from Pakistan, India, Afghanistan, Poland, Nigeria, Albania, from anywhere. But not by the English themselves. And the English are in a state where no system of benefits or state support, which, by the way, is not even being planned, would help them now. Even if it were introduced now, it still would not work anymore, precisely because active ethnic replacement is taking place.
I want to correct you on one thing about London. I just checked, out of curiosity. 59% of people in London were born in England, but native Britons, white Anglo-Saxons or Normans, are 36.8%. They are already a minority now.
Stas, I am very grateful for the fresh statistics, because we need to track the dynamics very closely, because a couple of years ago it was exactly 40 to 60. Now it is the other way around, already 60 to 40. Well, when you have a 60 to 40 dynamic.
Less than 40, 36.8.
Well, I rounded. Well, you are absolutely right. In fact, those 36% are just a sign of a negative trend.
Let's look at Manchester 1 second. Native Britons in Manchester are 48%, almost 49. Because half the population is already not native Britons.
That will mean that over a 10-talent-year span, Stas, we will see a very important phenomenon. How the upper house of the British Parliament, the House of Lords, is changing. And that is very important. The thing is that, in Britain, incidentally, on the issue of democracy, the upper house is formed on a hereditary basis. There is not a single elected member there. A person is either granted a noble title and becomes a member of the House of Lords, or they are born into a noble family. As a result, today, noble titles in Britain are being given to people from Britain's former colonies, mostly Pakistanis and Indians. Mostly.
Well, it is the aristocratic council that existed under... Exactly. That was under the princes. Well, there is something to it.
Stas, and the main point is that this House of Lords will now be populated by the cultural, mental, and religious milieu that the British themselves suppressed in their colonies for the last 200 years.
Do you not think it will just lead to civil war? Radically different cultures cannot coexist under one roof when they all try to be in charge. That has always been the case.
I think, Stas, remember last summer in Britain, there were a few incidents aimed at mobilizing Britain's white population into protest marches and active demonstrations. Do you remember how it ended? They were all broken up and put in prison. The activists were jailed, and some of them somehow ended up dying in custody the next day.
How long can that go on? And then these activists will stop just marching and start bombing and shooting.
It will be too late for them. The peak of possible civil unrest has already passed, and the white majority, in my view, is no longer capable of any comeback.
Why, 10% what? In a typical revolution, it only takes less than 10% to lead it.
Yes, but only if they are allowed to. But did you notice how Starmer deliberately treats those who promote ideas about defending cultural and ethnic autonomy? In other words, native English people? The moment they show any sign of activity, they are immediately sacked, have their bank accounts restricted, are put under police surveillance, and even their supplies. They are handed real prison terms for social media posts. Britain is now the leading country in the world by that statistic. In 2025 in Britain, over 10,000 people were criminally prosecuted and jailed for posts on social media and messaging apps.
15,000 last year, 15,000, a little less than 15,000. We had 400 if you count, but our population is four times larger.
What are 15,000 people? No country in the world that British authorities themselves label authoritarian or totalitarian has such numbers. Not in a single country. Yet there is supposedly democratic Britain. Moreover, let's remember who Prime Minister Starmer is. He is someone who, after qualifying as a lawyer, spent his career defending the rights of Pakistani organized crime groups. He did everything to prevent their leaders from being prosecuted, and those who were prosecuted, he would get released. For 20 years, Pakistani diaspora communities have been covering Starmer's expenses. Moreover, one of Starmer's biggest backers is, again, originally from Pakistan, I think, or India, but that does not matter, who covers all his family's expenses, even their football tickets, for him, his wife, and his children. And Starmer recommended that man, and succeeded in getting him appointed to the House of Lords. Yes, yes. Well, listen, Stas, this is just awful. Moreover, it turns out that someone who should protect his people's interests, mind you, Britain is also multinational, supposedly. But it seems Starmer, who is English by birth, has no interest in the interests of the native English.
Well, it is the same as saying, you know, if Vladimir Vladimirovich represented the interests of some ethnically based mafia in Russia. Yes, you are absolutely right. To represent something like that is one thing, but there it is not considered idiocy.
That is absolutely true. Moreover, during Starmer's 2 years as Prime Minister, two members of his cabinet, the Labour Minister and another minister, were forced to resign after concealing that they had been criminally prosecuted for theft. You see, He actually appointed people as ministers who were stealing, literally taking things. And on top of that, they lied so badly that it eventually came out.
Well, listen, in America, there was a deputy minister who was transgender and who stole women's clothes and handbags from actual women. Well, what can you say? It is a Western circus.
Exactly. Yes, a full-blown circus. Absolutely. But that raises the question. How do people like that manage to get recommendations and appointments to top managerial posts? It simply makes no sense. It is just beyond belief. It shows that the entire system for selecting people for top posts, the whole qualification process, simply does not work. Under such circumstances, it is no surprise that we are seeing how the British authorities operate under the false belief that, through some cheap provocations, they can make Russia dance to their tune and thereby enforce a blockade of Kaliningrad. These are people who cannot think even one step ahead, let alone two. That largely explains why Britain looks so foolish right now. We, as a nation, simply cannot believe that Britain's highest authorities have degraded this far. But it is a fact. With concrete examples, Stas, today we have shown what top-level managerial degradation looks like. Like this. You bring in every crook who will grab whatever is left unguarded. Those crooks start thinking, what are they going to do to the United States? We have a powerful navy. What powerful navy does Britain have? And it has reached a 17th century level. For example, this comes from a report published by Fiona Hill. It was initially a classified report from December. Since Starmer did not respond, she declassified it somehow and published it in The Spectator. No more, no less. I went through that report on my channel. I could hardly believe it contained real facts, but it really seemed to be true. Are you keeping an eye on the time, Stas?
No, someone called me. I just told them I was busy. Well, that was just a message. Great. I'm all ears.
What makes the report interesting is that it was prepared not only by Fiona Hill, but also by a former British Deputy Minister of Defense, who is also Chief of Staff of the Army. He, incidentally, recently again issued very unpleasant criticism of Starmer for his indecisiveness, and one of Britain's Army generals. They were three very competent people. In December, they wrote the following: that the British defense budget is already short by £25 billion to cover current needs. Moreover, the British artillery has only 14 howitzers left for the whole of Britain, because the other 17 howitzers are all that Britain has.
14, I missed that. Damn, that is a guard regiment. I meant to say, it is not even a regiment. Wait a second, it is a battery. No, it's a company.
Well, the fact remains. Competent people wrote that they had a bit of a meltdown in December. It turned out they have only 148 tanks.
Oh, I know that, yes.
That 148 includes Challenger 2s, but also older models. The same report says Poland now has three times as many.
Poland, which they had been laughing at all this time. But there is more. It is not just about the number of tanks. Some are what they call hangar queens, tanks that are stripped for parts to keep others running.
Yes.
They just strip them, cannibalism of equipment.
Exactly. Britain, remember, sent its Challenger 2 tanks to Ukraine. They were kept off the front for a long time, but things got so bad that those tanks somehow ended up at the front, or, as far as I can tell, they were not pulled back to the rear in time. And it turned out the Challenger 2 is totally unsuited for modern combat. It is too heavy, too unwieldy, and it has no protection against drones at all. It is simply useless. It's basically a coffin on tracks. What's more, it seems to excel at getting stuck in mud and soft ground. It immediately bottoms out, and you simply cannot pull it out.
No Western tank is built for heavy black soil. Our tanks have trouble getting through that. Our tanks are around 45 tons, while that vehicle is over 70. Yes, you are absolutely right. And narrow tracks, too. They have narrow tracks, you know. Nothing has changed in this since 1939.
What do you mean by narrow tracks? You start the engine, the tracks dig two ruts in soft ground. The tank bottoms out and cannot move. That is how it turns into a long-term firing position.
Right? A bunker, just a pillbox.
And actually, how did Starmer's government react to that report? Starmer's finance minister, Rachel Reeves, said she will not give the report's authors or the military a single penny until 2030. Not a single one. She said, there is no money in the budget anyway. Britain's budget is in deficit. Moreover, Britain has an absolutely horrific situation with repayments on existing loans. Britain pays twice as much on loan repayments as its defense budget. Can you imagine? Well, the United States is getting to that point too. Exactly.
There it is now, 1-to-1. No, 1.5-to-1. Next year it'll be 1-to-1, because the budget will grow to 1.5 trillion.
Exactly, yes. But by then, the United States debt payments will have risen too.
Because the debt will grow a lot as well.
And you, Stas, know as well as I do that Britain, unlike the United States, cannot print pounds the way you can print dollars.
Well, they can, but the results would be different.
Yes, that is what we are talking about. Technically, printing them is not hard, but the consequences would be different. The United States can afford to print unbacked dollars. Well, it cannot anymore either. The consequences have already begun. You are talking about efficiency, Stas, of course.
Yes, but it is not the same as Britain, of course.
If Britain starts printing pounds the same way the Federal Reserve prints dollars, then the pound would collapse much faster than would happen to the dollar. Of course, of course. In that case, they might as well print pounds in perforated rolls to use as toilet paper, you know? Why? 54 meters.
We saw in the Weimar Republic that marks, bundled Deutsche marks, burn very well in boiler rooms. Yes, to use as fuel, exactly.
They burn very well. Not quite, actually. In this situation, since Britain lacks a unified, reliable energy system, they are struggling with wind power, solar panels, and nuclear energy. They, remember, flirted with the green agenda for a long time and began shutting down their nuclear power plants and withdrawing funding. Then they changed their minds and decided to start rebuilding their nuclear plants, but it turned out British expertise in building power stations was lost. And now all contracts are being signed with the French company Électricité de France. A hallmark of Électricité de France is going over budget and taking at least 1.5 times longer to build, and often double. What does that mean? It means that if you expect Électricité de France to build or replace 3 reactors for you in 10 years, in 10 years you will find out those reactors will only come online 5 years later. And for that, you will need to add another 50% of funding on top. Otherwise, it will not work. This is exactly what is happening in Britain right now.
Sasha, I have to pause for a moment. Sorry. This is only the beginning. I am preparing it in English. But if you want, I would like to involve you in the project as well. To write reports on green energy. And frankly, green energy is all a lie. It is far worse for the environment than any conventional energy source. And it is also inefficient. If you are interested, I want to ask you to go over green energy with me, and we will break it down like this. Expensive, inefficient, and with no real prospects.
To get rid of nuclear power.
Yes, I do not consider nuclear energy. The pollution and resource destruction are many times greater than with other sources. If you are interested, we can write those articles.
So, we will have to figure it out. I get it, Stas, we have time and glass, right?
Yes, we have both time and glass. I have a hard stop there, I have another call.
I understand, Stas.
It's like our military political experts are taking time off for the holidays. Everyone thinks they have it easy. Who actually has it easy? You need to read. All that stuff, yeah, all of that is needed. Sasha, thank you very much. Let's get back to this topic, because right now there is an energy and food crisis here that has hit. It has not yet completely wrecked everything, but the Western elite is deliberately ignoring it. They are even trying very hard to ignore it, as best they can. So, thank you all very much. We are not done with this topic, because it is growing. We will keep opening people's eyes about green energy, because we also have elements trying to push this scam into our economy. All right, Sasha. Have a good evening. Thank you, Sasha. Thanks, everyone. We will be back.
Thank you very much.